Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for March 29th, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gazier. Election 2024, Government and Politics. States Rush to Combat AI Threats to Elections. By Zachary Roth, March 28th, 2024. This year's presidential election will be the first since generative AI, a form of artificial intelligence that can create new content, including images, audio, and video, became widely available. That's raising fears that millions of voters could be deceived by a barrage of political deepfakes. But while Congress has done little to address the issue, states are moving aggressively to respond. Though questions remain about how effective any new measures to combat AI-created disinformation will be. Last year, a fake AI-generated audio recording of a conversation between a liberal Slovakian politician and a journalist, in which they discussed how to rig the country's upcoming election, offered a warning to democracies around the world. Here in the United States, the urgency of the AI threat was driven home in February, when in the days before the New Hampshire primary, thousands of voters in the state received a robocall with an AI-generated voice impersonating President Joe Biden, urging them not to vote. A Democratic operative working for a rival candidate has admitted to commissioning the calls. In response to the call, the Federal Communications Commission issued a ruling restricting robocalls that contain AI-generated voices. Some conservative groups even appear to be using AI tools to assist with mass voter registration challenges, raising concerns that the technology could be harnessed to help existing voter suppression schemes. Quote, instead of voters looking to trusted sources of information about elections, including their state or county board of elections, AI-generated content can grab the voters' attention, said Megan Ballamy, Vice President for Law and Policy at the Voting Rights Lab, an advocacy group that tracks election-related state legislation. And this can lead to chaos and confusion leading up to and even after Election Day, end quote. Disinformation worries. The AI threat has emerged at a time when democracy advocates are already deeply concerned about the potential for, quote, ordinary, end quote, online disinformation to confuse voters, and when allies of former President Donald Trump appear to be having success in fighting off efforts to curb disinformation. But states are responding to the AI threat. Since the start of last year, 101 bills addressing AI and election disinformation have been introduced, according to a March 26 analysis by the Voting Rights Lab. On March 27th, Oregon became the latest state, after Wisconsin, New Mexico, Indiana, and Utah, to enact a law on AI-generated election disinformation. Florida and Idaho lawmakers have passed their own measures, which are currently on the desks of those states' governors. Arizona, Georgia, Iowa, and Hawaii, meanwhile, have all passed at least one bill. In the case of Arizona, two through one chamber. As that list of states makes clear, red, blue, and purple states have all devoted attention to the issue. States urged to act. Meanwhile, a new report on how to combat the AI threat to elections, drawing from input from four Democratic secretaries of state, was released March 25th by the New Deal Forum, a progressive advocacy group. Quote, generative AI has the ability to drastically increase the spread of election myths and disinformation and cause confusion among voters, the report warned. Four instance, subquote, deepfakes, and subquote, parenthetical, AI-generated images, voices, or videos, and parenthetical, could be used to portray a candidate saying or doing things that never happened, end quote. The New Deal Forum report urges states to take several steps to respond to the threat, including requiring that certain kinds of AI-generated campaign material be clearly labeled, conducting role-playing exercises to help anticipate the problems that AI could cause, creating rapid response systems for communicating with voters and the media in order to knock down AI-generated disinformation, and educating the public ahead of time. Secretaries of State Steve Simon of Minnesota, Jocelyn Benson of Michigan, Maggie Toulouse-Oliver of New Mexico, and Adrian Fontes of Arizona provided input for the report. All four are actively working to prepare their states on the issue. Loopholes seen. Despite the flurry of activity by lawmakers, officials, and outside experts, several of the measures examined in the Voting Rights Lab analysis appear to have weaknesses or loopholes that may raise questions about their ability to effectively protect voters from AI. Most of the bills require that creators add a disclaimer to any AI-generated content, noting the use of AI, as the New Deal Forum report recommends. But the new Wisconsin law, for instance, requires the disclaimer only for content created by campaigns, meaning deepfakes produced by outside groups but intended to influence an election, hardly an unlikely scenario, would be affected. In addition, the measure is limited to content produced by generative AI, even though experts say other types of synthetic content that don't use AI, like Photoshop and CGI, sometimes referred to as, quote, cheap fakes, end quote, can be just as effective at fooling viewers or listeners and can be more easily produced. For that reason, the New Deal Forum report recommends that state laws cover all synthetic content, not just that which use AI. The Wisconsin, Utah, and Indiana laws also contain no criminal penalties. Violations are punishable by a $1,000 fine, raising questions about whether they will work as a deterrent. The Arizona and Florida bills do include criminal penalties, but Arizona's two bills apply only to digital impersonation of a candidate, meaning plenty of other forms of AI-generated deception, impersonating a news anchor reporting a story, for instance, would remain legal. And one of the Arizona bills, as well as New Mexico's law, applied only in the 90 days before an election, even though AI-generated content that appears before that window could potentially still affect the vote. Experts say the shortcomings exist in large part because, since the threat is so new, states don't yet have a clear sense of exactly what form it will take. Quote, the legislative bodies are trying to figure out the best approach, and they're working off of examples that they've already seen, said Bellamy, pointing to the examples of the Slovakian audio and the Biden robocalls. Quote, they're just not sure what direction this is coming from, but feeling the need to do something, end quote. Quote, I think that we will see the solutions evolve, Bellamy added. The danger of that is that AI-generated content and what it can do is also likely to evolve at the same time. So hopefully we can keep up. Government and politics. Healthcare. Auditor Rob Zand criticizes AG Brenna Byrd's decision to pause emergency contraception payments. By Robin Opsahl, March 27, 2024. Iowa Auditor Rob Zand said at a news conference Wednesday that Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd is, quote, avoiding accountability, end quote, for pausing payments for emergency contraceptives and other services for sexual assault victims by characterizing the reason as an audit. Byrd, a Republican who defeated longtime Democratic Attorney General Tom Miller in the 2022 election, announced quickly after taking office that she would conduct a, quote, full audit of victim services, end quote, and pause payments to certain programs in Iowa, including the Sexual Assault Examination Payment Program. The program used money from the state's Victim Compensation Fund to pay for emergency contraception and, in rare cases, abortions for victims of sexual assault and rape. The Attorney General's office has not yet released a review of victim services more than a year later. On Sunday, the Des Moines Register reported that the report is complete and a draft exists, but that certain staff members say there needs to be more work done on the issue and that the office was not required to release the draft through a Freedom of Information Act request. While Byrd has repeatedly called the review of victim services an, quote, audit, end quote, Sand said in a news conference that there was no audit being conducted of these services by his office or any third party. While there may be an, quote, internal review, end quote, happening, the Democratic auditor said this investigation into victim services does not follow regular auditing guidelines, nor does it match with common practices for conducting reviews. Unless there's a suspicion of, quote, massive fraud, end quote, entities don't stop operations while an audit or review is in progress, Sand said. Quote, every city, every county, every school district in the entire state of Iowa gets an audit every year. None of them have ever suspended business while waiting for the audit to get completed. This is a policy decision the Attorney General made, end quote. Sand, emergency contraception not paid by taxpayers. Sand also noted that the program providing funding for rape and sexual assault victims to access emergency contraception does not use taxpayer dollars. The funds for medicine or medical procedures come from fines collected during criminal convictions. The state auditor said Byrd's choice was to use the term, quote, audit, end quote, to refer to the review is a way to shirk responsibility for her choice to pause payments. Quote, "This kind of coverage makes it sound, number one, like there's an audit going on, but number two, like the Attorney General is just sort of waiting for someone else to do something," Sands said. "That is not the situation here. It sounds so innocuous. That's hogwash. This is her decision on day one to quit paying for emergency contraception for sexual assault survivors," end quote. Medical providers and response teams working with sexual assault victims have criticized the Attorney General's decision, as more than 100 reimbursement claims for these services remain pending. Some local governments, like the Polk County Board of Supervisors, have opted to independently fund contraception and crisis services for victims in the wake of Byrd's announcement. Maisie Stilwell, Director of Public Affairs for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Iowa, said it was, quote, "absolutely deplorable," end quote, that sexual assault victims have gone more than a year without state coverage for emergency contraceptives. Quote, "These are vulnerable Iowans who deserve to be treated with dignity and respect, instead of facing unnecessary barriers erected by politicians who are hell-bent on taking away Iowans' fundamental rights one policy at a time," Stilwell said in a statement Wednesday. "These are real people whose lives and futures are affected. We deserve better from the politicians elected to represent us." Attorney General spokeswoman Sand is, quote, "plain politics." Alyssa Brule, communications director for the AG's office, said in a statement that Sand and Planned Parenthood are, quote, "flat wrong," end quote, criticizing the auditor for, quote, "plain politics with a critical audit of victim services and blasting misinformation to boost his own profile," end quote. Brule said the report will be publicly released once finalized. Quote, "While not required by Iowa law, the Victim Compensation Fund has previously paid for Plan B and abortions," Brule said in a statement. As a part of her top-down, bottom-up audit of victim assistance, Attorney General Byrd is carefully evaluating this is an appropriate use of public funds. That audit is ongoing. Until that review is complete, payment of these pending claims will be delayed. Byrd said in a 2023 Iowa Press interview that she plans to permanently pause reimbursement for these medical services once the audit is completed. Quote, "Those services still remain available under Iowa law to victims," Byrd said in the interview. "It's just whether public funds will pay for them." Government and politics. Iowa House, Senate release competing budget targets for next fiscal year, by Robin Opsahl, March 28, 2024. Republican leadership in the Iowa House and Senate released their budget targets Thursday, beginning negotiations on government spending for the upcoming fiscal year. The budget releases come less than 3 weeks before the scheduled end of the session on April 16th. They also come a day after Governor Kim Reynolds signed into law one of her key priorities for the session, a measure making changes to Iowa's area education agencies, increasing minimum teacher salaries, as well as setting the state's supplemental aid rate for per pupil school funding for the upcoming year. Education funding makes up a majority of the state's spending each year. House Appropriations Committee Chair Representative Gary Moore told reporters it was important to, quote, "know what those big expenditure items are before we finalize any budgets," end quote. With the public K-12 spending components in place, the House released a state budget target of $8.955 billion for fiscal year 2025. The House budget proposes 4.71%, $402.8 million, in increased spending from the $8.552 billion appropriated the current fiscal year. The House proposal is about $35 million higher than the Reynolds budget plan released at the beginning of the 2024 legislative session, which included $8.919 billion in total appropriations. Moore, Republican Bettendorf, said the difference between Reynolds and House Republicans' targets came from specific requests made by House lawmakers on appropriations for programs and services impacting their communities. Quote, "It comes basically from our members who say, subquote, my constituents feel a need for this or that program," end quote, Moore said. Quote, "But again, with our available resources, we feel very comfortable that the state can afford to do that," end quote. In the Revenue Estimating Conference meeting earlier in March, the three-person panel projected a 2.2% revenue decrease in fiscal year 2023. But Iowa Department of Management Director Craig Paulson said that with a $1.83 billion general fund surplus, $2.74 billion in the state's taxpayer relief fund and $902 million in reserve funds, the Iowa state government is in a strong financial position. Senate Republicans also released their budget target Thursday, aiming for $8.872 billion for fiscal year 2025, roughly $82 million lower than the House Republicans' target and $47 million lower than Reynolds' proposal. In a news release, state Republicans said their budget target includes an increase of $172 million for public K-12 schools through the AEA, teacher pay, and school funding law. The budget also includes an additional $51.25 million in new funding for education savings accounts, the private school scholarship program that began in the current school year. While other details on the Senate budget proposal have not yet been released, Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer said the state government is in a good position, and he hopes to take further action on taxes before the end of session. Quote, next year's budget is projected to have an ongoing surplus of more than $1 billion. The taxpayer relief fund balance is expected to be about $3.8 billion, and tax rates will continue to decline, Whitfer said in the news release. Iowa is in great fiscal shape, and the economy is strong despite the headwinds of the Biden economy. I'm optimistic we can do more for taxpayers before this legislature adjourns. The governor, as well as Republicans in both chambers, have said they plan to take action on further decreasing Iowa's income tax rates this session, building off of a 2022 law that started Iowa on a path toward a flat income tax rate of 3.9% by 2026. Reynolds proposed cutting the current highest individual income tax rate of 5.7% to 3.65% retroactively for 2024, with another drop to 3.5% in 2025. Representative Bobby Kaufman, Republican Wilton, and Senator Dan Dawson, Republican Council Bluffs, who chaired the Tax Writing Ways and Means Committees, introduced legislation to cut the individual income tax rate to 3.775% in 2026, and then to 3.65% in 2027. The bill also sets up a system to fund future income tax reductions until the tax reaches 0% through the creation of a, quote, Iowa Taxpayer Relief Trust, end quote. The trust would take an additional $2.6 billion from the Taxpayer Relief Fund, and 5% of the fund's money would be put toward reducing the income tax rate each year until the tax is eliminated. Reynolds' bill, Senate File 2398, was approved by the Senate Ways and Means Committee in February. Dawson said at the time that the other tax proposal is still in the running for consideration. But his and Kaufman's legislation, Senate Study Bill 3141, and its House companion have not received subcommittee meetings. Moore said the House is considering, quote, several options, end quote, on income tax cuts, but that regardless of the route, the state has the capacity to make these reductions. Quote, we have sufficient dollars to build the $8.95 billion budget for the people of Iowa's government for next year. And there's still available resources that we want to look at options for giving that back to the taxpayers of Iowa, he said. Representative Timmy Brown Powers of Waterloo, ranking Democrat on the House Appropriations Committee, released a statement Thursday criticizing Republicans for the lack of information and public discussion on the budgeting process for the upcoming year. Quote, once again, Iowans are being left in the dark while Republican insiders and special interests work together behind closed doors to spend our money, Brown Power said. With just 20 days left in session and $9 billion on the line, Iowans certainly deserve more information than what they've received so far. Ag and Environment, Carbon Pipeline, Government and Politics. Iowa House passes eminent domain bill for pipelines. By Jared Strong, March 28, 2024. A bill approved by the Iowa House on Thursday would allow landowners who are subject to eminent domain requests by carbon dioxide pipeline companies to challenge the legitimacy of those requests in court earlier in the permit proceedings. House File 2664 was approved by a bipartisan 86-7 vote. Its future in the Senate is unclear. It is the latest attempt by the House to aid landowners who object to Summit Carbon Solutions' proposed use of eminent domain to build a sprawling pipeline system that would transport captured carbon dioxide from 30 ethanol plants in Iowa to North Dakota for underground storage. If the Iowa Utilities Board grants the company's request, Landowners who have refused to negotiate easements for the project voluntarily would have to give up the land at a price set by a government board. A bill the House adopted last year would have required Summit to obtain voluntary land easements for 90% of its route before being eligible for eminent domain. The Senate did not take it up. The new bill the House approved Thursday would not, itself, limit eminent domain for the pipeline projects. It is meant to expedite a court decision about whether eminent domain is allowable, a decision that under current rules might come many months after state regulators issue a permit. The bill would allow court challenges before permits are issued, at the request of affected landowners or the companies that propose the projects. Quote, "For that entire period, you have the Century Farms, landowners, people who didn't especially want to have this pipeline going over their land and have some questions about it, not being able to get an answer on their constitutional law question, and not being able to sell their land at full value, or make decisions on tiling, or make a decision on estate planning for all that period of time," said Representative Charlie Thompson, Republican Charles City, who was an attorney and managed the bill. This bill corrects that. Summit began its pipeline permit process with the Iowa Utilities Board in August 2021. A year later, in August 2022, it began notifying the Board of Properties that might be subject to its eminent domain request. Now, about 19 months later, the Board is poised to decide those requests, which represent about a quarter of its initial route in Iowa. The Board has declined to say whether Summit's project benefits the public in a way that makes it eligible for eminent domain. Quote, "This legislation simply allows both landowners and companies the opportunity to have a declaratory judgment up front on the constitutionality of an eminent domain request before precious time and money are wasted," said Representative Stephen Holt, Republican Denison, who has been a leading voice against eminent domain for carbon dioxide pipelines. "This legislation would allow landowners a little peace of mind, getting to know up front the validity of an eminent domain request so that they could plan accordingly, as opposed to waiting and fighting for years, their land in limbo, their futures in doubt, their lives full of tension and fear, while they plead with their elected officials to hear them." The legislation is opposed by Summit, the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association, and several biofuels companies, according to lobbyist declarations. The Iowa Farm Bureau Federation did not declare its opposition or support. 7 House Republicans voted against the bill. Michael Bergen of Decorah, Tom Determin of Clinton, Chad Ingalls of Randalia, Brian Lowes of Bondurant, Norlin Momsen of DeWitt, Matt Rinker of Burlington, and David Seek of Glenwood. The scope of Summit's project has expanded in recent months after another company, Navigator CO2, abandoned a similar proposal. That has led Summit to ink agreements with most of the ethanol plants that had intended to connect to the Navigator system. Summit's proposal has grown to about 2,500 miles of pipe in 5 states to transport carbon dioxide from 57 ethanol plants. The company was initially denied permits by state regulators in the Dakotas, but North Dakota is reconsidering a modified plan. Summit has said it will reapply in South Dakota with a different route. Government and politics. Capital clicks. Governor Kim Reynolds deploys National Guard law enforcement to U.S. southern border in Texas. By Robin Opsahl, March 28, 2024. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds will deploy more than 100 Iowa National Guard and Iowa Department of Public Safety officers to Texas to support the state's law enforcement efforts along the U.S.-Mexico border. Reynolds said in a news release Thursday that sending personnel to Texas is an effort to help Texas, quote, on the front lines of this crisis, end quote. She accused President Joe Biden of inaction on southern border security. Quote, "President Biden and his administration have failed to protect the sovereignty of our borders and the safety of the American people," Reynolds said in a statement. "What Texas faces is nothing short of an invasion with historic levels of illegal immigrants and illicit drugs entering our country. Now, every state is a border state, and with that comes a duty to protect the people of Iowa." Biden supported a bipartisan immigration deal reached earlier this year in the U.S. Senate. But Senate Republicans abandoned the plan after House Republicans raised objections. The Iowa deployment will be in support of, quote, Operation Lone Star, end quote, a joint operation between Texas's Department of Public Safety and Texas Military Department launched in 2021 by Texas Governor Greg Abbott to to address illegal border crossings and trafficking. This will not be the first time Iowa troops and law enforcement officers have been sent to assist the operation. Reynolds deployed 28 Iowa State Patrol troopers in 2021 and more than 100 Iowa National Guard soldiers in 2023. The State National Guard will deploy on two missions to Texas in the coming months. From April 1st through May 3rd, 110 troops will be in Texas assisting, quote, the Texas military's department security objectives, end quote. The second deployment of five troops will be in Texas from April 1st through September 30th, providing public assistance and vehicle maintenance. Eight Iowa DPS troopers and two sergeants will deploy from March 31st through April 27th, assisting the Texas Department of Public Safety. The support effort will be funded using federal American Rescue Plan funds. The 2023 deployments also used ARP funds, costing $1.93 million. The latest deployments come following Reynolds' trip to Eagle Pass, Texas in February, where she and 12 other GOP governors joined Abbott to support Texas's efforts to address illegal immigration on a state instead of federal basis. Texas passed a law in 2023 making illegal immigration a state crime. That law is currently not being enforced under a federal appeals court order Tuesday. Iowa lawmakers have sent a similar bill to Reynolds. Senate File 2340, awaiting the governor's signature, would create an aggravated misdemeanor charge for entering Iowa or being found in the state for people who have been denied admission, deported, or removed from the country. The legislation also would allow state courts to order the deportation of undocumented immigrants and allow law enforcement and state agencies to transport those charged to ports of entry to ensure they leave the country. Ag and Environment, Capital Clicks. Widespread rains ease drought in western Iowa. By Jared Strong, March 28, 2024. There was significant rainfall in the past week across the northern half of the state, with much of that area receiving at least 2 inches of precipitation, according to the National Weather Service. That helped reverse drought conditions that had been pestering Iowa for more than 3 years. The state's overall dryness is now comparable to what it was in August, before it accelerated to a new peak last fall, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. About 71% of the state is suffering from some measure of drought, down from nearly all the state at its worst. But Iowa is still substantially drier than a year ago, when less than a third of the state had drought. Small areas of central Iowa had at least 4 inches of precipitation in the past week. A portion of far southeast Iowa had less than half an inch. But that area had also been wetter than the rest of the state. Some of it has no drought or dryness designation. The driest area in the northeast quadrant of the state that has had extreme drought, the second to worst classification, shrunk by about a third in the past week. Drought is expected to persist there into the summer, according to the Federal Climate Prediction Center, but it should continue to ease in the southwest half of the state. The recent rains have been a boon to rivers in western Iowa, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. Nearly all those rivers it monitors have a normal or above normal flows. For example, the surface of the North Raccoon River near Jefferson has risen about 4 feet since the start of the week. You are listening to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for March 29th, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's continue with this week's stories. Criminal justice and policing. Healthcare. Dentist accused of sexual impropriety surrenders his license a second time. Allegations of misconduct date back to 1993. By Clark Kaufman, March 26, 2024. An Iowa dentist with a history of alleged sexual misconduct with multiple patients has agreed to surrender his license. In December, the Iowa Dental Board declared that 65-year-old Dr. Calvin Weber of Glenwood posed, quote, an imminent threat to public safety, end quote, and suspended his license on an emergency basis. The action came 4 months after Weber was criminally charged with assaulting a female outside his office. The board accused Weber of improper sexual contact with a patient or making lewd, lascivious, or improper remarks or advances to a patient, and with violating Iowa law with regard to the practice of dentistry. Police records related to the incident show that in July 2023, a woman came to the Glenwood Police Department and complained that while she was in Weber's dental office, He made comments on how sexy she was and grabbed her buttocks. She reported that he then followed her outside of the building and again grabbed her buttocks, pulling her close to him and telling her, quote, keep being sexy. As a result of the allegations, police charged Weber with assault, a simple misdemeanor, in August 2023. In December, a judge found Weber guilty of assault and fined him $855. Recently, Weber agreed to surrender his license. Weber was first licensed by the state in 1983 and has a history of alleged misconduct with female patients. In July 1993, he was charged with unprofessional conduct in the practice of dentistry and accused of inappropriately touching two female patients, one of whom was 17 years old, during their dental appointments. 1 month after those charges were filed, Weber was accused of misconduct with two additional patients. One of the patients alleged she awoke from sedation to find Weber's hand beneath her blouse, touching her breast while calling her sexy. She said Weber later asked her out and the two had consensual sex at his home. She later described elements of Weber's anatomy and the layout of his home for investigators. The board suspended Weber's license indefinitely while ordering him to undergo a psychiatric evaluation within 60 days before being considered for reinstatement. 4 months later, in April 1994, the board accused Weber of failing to submit to an evaluation, and Weber agreed to surrender his license. After surrendering his Iowa license, Weber moved to Florida, where he was employed as a golf professional, board records show. In December 2006, after Weber submitted to an evaluation and agreed to undergo ongoing therapy, the board agreed to reinstate his dental license. Iowa Capital Dispatch was unable to reach Weber for comment. Healthcare. UI College of Dentistry faculty member charged with unethical conduct. Assistant professor allegedly interfered with a patient's complaint to regulators. By Clark Kaufman, March 27, 2024. An assistant professor at the University of Iowa College of Dentistry is facing sanctions for multiple alleged regulatory violations, including dishonest, abusive, or threatening behavior. The Iowa Dental Board has charged Dr. Tiago Soares Porto with practicing dentistry in a manner harmful or detrimental to the public, unethical conduct related to actions deemed to be abusive, coercive, intimidating, harassing, untruthful, or threatening, unethical conduct for actions that interfered with a patient filing a complaint with the board, failing to comply with the standard precautions for preventing and controlling infectious diseases, and engaging in the practice of dentistry outside of the College of Dentistry without the appropriate license. The publicly available records from the Iowa Dental Board give no indication when the alleged violations took place. Aside from an allegation that Porto had entered into an agreement with a patient to prevent that individual from filing a complaint with the board, the specific actions that gave rise to the charges have not been publicly disclosed. A board hearing on the charges is scheduled for June 14th. In a written statement, Porto's attorney, Todd M. Lance, said, quote, Dr. Porto has a spotless record and adamantly denies that he has done anything unethical or that would subject him to professional discipline. He has fully cooperated with the dental board and looks forward to defending himself in a formal hearing. Porto is a state-licensed dentist who also holds a faculty permit and practices dentistry as a member of the College of Dentistry's faculty. According to the college, Porto is an assistant professor of operative dentistry. On the school's website, Porto writes that he is working, quote, to shape the future of dentistry, end quote, by directing courses for second-year students. Education, capital clicks. UNI professor adds to public history of North American Review with Harvard Fellowship. By Brooklyn Drazy, March 28, 2024. A University of Northern Iowa English professor is using funds and resources provided by the Harvard University Houghton Library Dearborn Fellowship to reveal a fuller historical picture of the North American Review and the attitudes its editors held towards slavery and abolition ahead of the Civil War. Jeremy Schroffenberger, a 2023-2024 visiting fellow, will spend a total of 4 weeks at the Houghton Library and receive a $4,500 stipend for his project, a UNI news release stated, titled, quote, Slavery, Abolition, and Colonization in the Antebellum North American Review. Quote, the ultimate goal of this project is not only to articulate a clear picture of the shifting public attitudes towards slavery as represented in the antebellum pages of the NAR, but also to discover how these ideas may be reflected in the private, internal documents during the editorial and publishing processes of the magazine, including artifacts referring to subscriptions, printing, and distribution, Schaffenberger said in a release. The North American Review, founded in 1815 in Boston, is the oldest literary magazine in the country. Contributors to the magazine have included Abraham Lincoln, Harriet Beecher Stowe, Mark Twain, Margaret Atwood, Kurt Vonnegut, and more. You and I purchased a publication in 1968 from Cornell College, and issues of the magazine are still printed today. Schaffenberger is a co-editor of the North American Review. As only men connected with Harvard were allowed to edit the publication at the time, the release stated the Houghton Library holds materials from editors that are crucial to Schaffenberger's research and inaccessible through other means. These include correspondence, manuscripts, notes, and more. Schaffenberger said in the release that current readers and writers of the publication will be able to access his work beyond any academic publication that comes of it. Quote, "The invaluable resources of the Houghton Library will allow us to contribute to the ongoing historical project of the North American Review as we confront the past in order to move more restoratively into the future," Schaffenberger said in the release. Ag and Environment. Ag Secretary Vilsack announces $124 million in funding for smaller farms and rural businesses, 19 in Nebraska. Projects in 44 states aim to lower energy costs, generate new income, and create jobs. By Cindy Gonzalez, March 28, 2024. Omaha. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack announced $124 million in grants and loans to projects in 44 states, including Iowa, that are aimed at saving energy and creating more income streams for smaller farmers and rural businesses. The heftiest award, nearly $4 million, went to Nebraska-based Blue Stem Systems to help boost a creative process that removes water and pathogens from manure. In doing so, the company produces dry fertilizer and recycles the water for on-site use. Blue Stem's grant is part of the USDA's Fertilizer Production Expansion Program, FPEP, and the rest of the funding comes via the Rural Energy for American Program, REAP. In all, Vilsack said, the 542 projects, most of the awards range from about $7,000 to $1 million, are expected to advance President Joe Biden's pledge to expand clean energy and allow small to mid-sized farm and rural operations a better chance at competing with larger counterparts. 30 Iowa projects received a total of just over $2.76 million. Record farm income, but bounty is concentrated. To a group of about 75 people at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, Vilsack described key challenges faced by most farmers. Since 1981, he said, the nation has lost some 545,000 farms and 155 million acres of former farmland. While the nation has enjoyed record farm income in the last few years, he said, the income has been concentrated among 7% of farms that cumulatively collect up to 89% of the bounty. Part of the answer to shrinking rural communities, Vilsack said, is to provide access to funding via programs such as REAP and FPEP. Such monies, he said, open the door to creating other, quote, value-added, end quote, opportunities and sources of income for farmers. Instead of, quote, get big or get out, Vilsack said, the word is entrepreneurial. Fertilizer mix, recycled water. Russ Vering, owner of Blue Stem Systems, based in Howells, Nebraska, was on the panel. He said the nearly $4 million FPEP award headed to his business will help construction and equipment purchases at two Nebraska locations and another in Iowa. Vering said the funding, more specifically, will accelerate development of Blue Stem's process that removes water from manure and separates remaining soil nutrients to create a fertilizer mix. The water is recycled for use in the plant, Vering said, nearly eliminating the need to haul away water and thereby also reducing traffic on the roads. Quote, we're excited, Vering said. We're going to make a great impact on farms in Nebraska by reducing cost and defining sustainability. Vilsack spent more than an hour participating in the roundtable discussion and talking to the audience about the Biden administration's investment in rural communities nationwide. Of the newly announced grants and loans, Vilsack said, quote, investments announced today will expand access to renewable energy systems and domestic fertilizer, all while creating good-paying jobs and saving people money that they can then invest back into their businesses and communities. Wind turbines, solar systems. Among the larger REAP awards for Iowa projects were DeWitt Travel Mart, $395,527 to help install a 423.5 kilowatt solar array at its convenience store in DeWitt. Deck Supply Services, $283,977 to help install a 281.8 kilowatt solar array at its sheet metal work manufacturing operations near Walcott. L&S Ag Center, $203,477 to help install a 199 kilowatt solar array at its farm supply business in Worthington. D. Daufeldt Farms Incorporated, $160,728 to help install a 114 kilowatt solar project at its turkey production operations near West Liberty. Home 40 LTD, $160,259 to help install an energy-efficient grain dryer at its oilseed and grain production farm operation near Britt. Vilsack told the Omaha audience that investments into such programs will help revive the rural economy and contribute to the nation in other ways. Quote, food security is national security, he said. He said rural communities produce youths who grow up practicing the value of, quote, giving back, end quote, to community and country. Quote, it's a great new day, he said after outlining USDA programs. I'm very optimistic. This story was originally published by Nebraska Examiner, which is part of State's Newsroom, a nonprofit news network supported by grants and a coalition of donors as a 501c3 public charity. Nebraska Examiner maintains editorial independence. Contact editor Kate Folsom for questions. info@nebraskaexaminer.com. Healthcare. Commentary. Pharmacy deserts threaten Iowa's picture of health. State senators can help by passing bill to curb pharmacy benefit managers. By Cheryl Tevis, March 27, 2024. From the Iowa Writers Collaborative. It's a good bet Iowans would sit up and take notice if 40.8% of the state's independent pharmacies close their doors in 2025. Yet, that's the prediction of pharmacists who responded to an October 2023 survey by the Iowa Pharmacy Association. This session's legislative grandstanding has sucked most of the oxygen out of the room. But House File 2401, Regulation of Pharmacy Benefit Managers, flew under the radar to House passage. The bill is aimed to address the threat to Iowa pharmacies and hold pharmacy benefit managers, PBMs, accountable to fulfill their, quote, duty of good faith and fair dealing, end quote. It's now in the Senate, eligible for floor debate. Third-party PBMs play a pivotal but powerfully opaque role in negotiating drug prices and reimbursements. PBMs also control which pharmacies are included in your prescription drugs plan's preferred network, as well as how much these pharmacies will be paid. They regulate the drugs covered under your healthcare plan and copays and routinely extract discounts and rebates from drug manufacturers. PBMs have been holding pharmacists hostage between a rock and a hard place, reimbursing them at lower rates and forcing them to sell common brand-name prescriptions at a loss. Although PBMs were created in the 1960s to help insurers contain spending on drugs, they now commonly exert market leverage to bloat their own profits and tack fees onto pharmacies in exchange for inclusion in their preferred networks. In 2022, Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller, working with other state attorney generals, regained $44.4 million for Iowans after Centene, Iowa Total Care, and its PBM Involve overcharged Iowa's Medicaid program for prescriptions and pharmacy services. Centene also failed to pass on some retail discounts, ultimately inflating fees and costs for all Iowans. Legislation would bar spread pricing. Iowa lawmakers have attempted to curb the powers of PBMs over the past 15 years, but they face a substantial lobby. In 2020, a U.S. Supreme Court ruling allowed states to regulate PBMs. In 2022, Iowa passed legislation to bring PBM oversight under the Iowa Department of Insurance. House File 2401 would prohibit spread pricing, which allows PBMs to charge health insurers more than what they pay to pharmacies for medications. PBMs would be required to use the National Average Drug Acquisition Cost, which is based on a government retail price survey and focuses on community pharmacy costs. Retired pharmacist Representative John Forbes, Democrat Urbandale, supports this more standardized method of pricing prescription drugs. The bill also protects pharmacists who have been reluctant to file complaints with the Iowa Insurance Division out of fear of retaliation from PBMs. House File 2401 would prohibit retaliation. Iowa's insurance commissioner would have the authority to investigate such claims and review PBM pricing in a step-by-step required claim report. Deck is stacked against independent pharmacies. In my previous column, RX is needed for rural pharmacies, I highlighted the concentration in the pharmaceutical industry. The issue is compounded when you realize these companies also have their own PBMs, allowing them the unfair advantage of being vertically and horizontally integrated. CVS purchased Aetna in 2018. It also owns CVS Caremark, a PBM company. Cigna owns Express Scripts, and United Health Group's own OptumRx. This combination of consolidation and vertical and horizontal integration is accelerating the decline of independent pharmacies. Research has shown that pharmacies' retail list prices, cash prices, are higher for generic drugs at independent pharmacies and small chains than at large chain pharmacies. Three companies, OptumRx, CVS Caremark, and Express Scripts, control about 80% of the market. According to the Health Industries Research, a nonpartisan healthcare market research organization, here's how the PBM market stacks the deck. CVS Caremark, 34%. Express Scripts, 25%. OptumRx, 21%. Humana, 8%. Vertical integration allows PBMs to steer their health plans toward using their pharmacies and undermining the free market. Take it or leave it. Data from the University of Iowa's Carver College of Medicine reinforces the Iowa Pharmacy Association survey. Michael Andreski, RPH, PhD, Associate Professor of Pharmacy at Drake University in Des Moines, has surveyed Iowa pharmacies, finding that the state lost almost 14% of its pharmacies between 2008 and 2022. He says this decline is hitting independent pharmacies harder, especially in rural communities. Andreski is using his survey results to design pharmacy desert maps to convince Iowa legislators of the need for serious action to stem these losses. Quote, currently, Iowans are paying a large amount of money to the three PBMs that dominate the market, Andreski says. House File 2401 would ensure that the money insurance companies are now paying to PBMs now will go to pay pharmacists for the medications they dispense. Andreski testified earlier this session in a subcommittee on the closure of Iowa pharmacies. He warns that lobbyists will work hard to water down this legislation. Quote, representatives of the PBM industry stated that costs will increase for patients and insurers if the bill passes, he says. This is a scare tactic that's been used in other states and hasn't been proven to be true anywhere regulations have passed. The bill would allow pharmacies to be adequately paid with the money PBMs already are charging insurance companies, not retained as profit for the PBMs, end quote. Today's independent pharmacies also must compete with big box retailers and supermarkets selling generic drugs at lower prices or as a loss leader. Parenthetically, think Walmart, Target, Costco, or Hy-Vee, end parenthetical. Mail order pharmacies, another source of competition, aren't the answer for rural or inner city residents, especially for pain medications, antivirals, or antibiotics. Insulins and other medications lose their effectiveness when delivered by truck during extremely hot weather. Furthermore, elderly people rely on face-to-face interactions to discuss side effects and dosages. Pharmacies need a clean bill of health. This issue hurts pharmacies in low-income, underserved urban areas, as well as rural communities, where residents already face health disparities. But all Iowans ultimately pay the price. It's a national issue, and Congress has several PBM transparency bills in the hopper. But they're likely low on the totem pole compared to higher-profile bills, including keeping the government operating, funding Ukraine, or passing the Farm Bill. However, Representative Marionette Miller-Meeks introduced a bipartisan PBM bill at a House panel February 20th. The Department of Justice's recent antitrust suit attempts to take a bite out of Apple. The pharmaceutical industry merits similar scrutiny. However, it will be years before any DOJ action. Much depends on the 2024 election. As of June 2023, 15 states had imposed transparency or reporting requirements for PBMs. 7 states had added oversight into prescription drug pricing, and 8 states had specifically targeted PBMs for reporting, according to the National Academy for State Health Policy. If the Senate acts, Iowa could join this list. Health File 2401 wouldn't cure the problem of vertically integrated health insurance companies, PBMs, and pharmacies, but it could sustain independent pharmacies on life support until more can be done. How healthy is your pharmacy? The failing health of Iowa pharmacies impacts the quality of our health care across the state. PBMs should not be coming between you and your next prescription. Reforms may be a bitter pill for the pharmaceutical industry to swallow, but it would be just what the doctor has ordered. This column first appeared on Cheryl Tevis's blog, Unfinished Business, and was republished here via the Iowa Writers Collaborative. Cheryl Tevis. As farm management editor at Successful Farming Magazine at Meredith Corporation in Des Moines, Cheryl was the first woman editor in the magazine's history to write about business. Her monthly column elevated the role of women in agriculture. She also wrote the longest-running farm magazine's health and safety page. She retired in 2015 after 36 years. Cheryl served on the board of Farm Safety for Just Kids and is a founding member of Iowa Women in Agriculture. She farms and is a longtime 4-H leader and community volunteer in Boone County, Iowa. Her column, Unfinished Business, is on Substack, and she is a member of the Iowa Writers Collaborative. And that does it for today's reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for March 29th, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gaisher. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. At high doses, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like diclofenac, ibuprofen, or naproxen may increase the risk of kidney problems. The study that revealed this used de-identified medical records of more than 750,000 active duty U.S. Army soldiers. Consequently, these were active young and middle-aged adults. During the time of the study, from 2011 through 2014, nearly 18% of these soldiers got a prescription for 1 to 7 doses of an NSAID pain reliever in a month. Another 16% were prescribed more than 7 doses in a month. Fewer than 1% of these people were subsequently diagnosed with acute or chronic kidney disease. Nevertheless, the rate of kidney trouble was about 20% higher among people who had received high-dose NSAIDs than among those who had taken none. The authors described the increased risk as modest but statistically significant.
Another class of drugs that can lead to kidney injury is proton pump inhibitors. A data mining initiative of the FDA's Adverse Event Reporting System analyzed kidney-related side effects among 43,000 people who took a drug such as esomeprazole, lansoprazole, or omeprazole. Approximately 8,000 people taking a histamine 2 blocker such as ranitidine or famotidine served as controls, since they take these drugs for similar symptoms. The researchers found that 5.6% of people on PPIs alone had a kidney-related side effect, while only 0.7% of those on H2 blockers did. Chronic kidney disease was 28 times more likely, and acute kidney injury was 4 times more likely among people taking PPIs. While this analysis shows association, not causation, there are previous studies linking PPIs and kidney damage.
There's growing concern about a mysterious infectious disease that has been spreading among the wild deer population for decades. Scientists call it CWD, or chronic wasting disease. Hunters refer to this condition as zombie deer disease. It can also affect elk and moose. The CDC reports that this infectious disease has spread to wildlife in 24 states and 2 Canadian provinces. CWD was first detected in Colorado among captive deer in the 1960s and in the wild deer population in the 1980s. It's now affecting deer in the Midwest, Southwest, and some parts of the East Coast. The disease appears to be caused by a prion infection reminiscent of mad cow disease. An infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota has warned that hunters who eat contaminated deer meat may eventually develop the human equivalent of chronic wasting disease.
Shoulder replacement surgery is becoming increasingly common. Now, researchers writing in the BMJ say that patients should be warned that the risks are higher than originally thought. The investigators reviewed hospital and mortality records in the UK. When men between 50 and 59 have this type of shoulder surgery, 1 in 4 will need further surgery on that shoulder within 5 years. In addition, older people who underwent this kind of surgical procedure experienced high rates of serious adverse events. 1 in 9 older women and 1 in 5 older men had an infection, major blood clot, heart attack or stroke, or died within 3 months. The authors of the study encouraged their colleagues to counsel patients about the risks as well as the benefits of this kind of surgery.
Drug interactions are a serious hazard in hospitals and the community. If patients receive prescriptions for incompatible medications, they can experience severe side effects that may even be life-threatening. Electronic medical records are intended to warn prescribers and pharmacists about potentially dangerous interactions, but many do so indiscriminately. The result is something called alert fatigue. If clinicians receive too many warnings, they may not pay attention to the really important ones. A team at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital reviewed their alert system. They removed unnecessary alerts and provided additional information to the most important ones. After they finished, they tracked clinicians' reactions. Alert overrides dropped by 40%. One important change linked alerts to the patient's laboratory data, making them much more targeted. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.